strange days indeed continues with Errol Bruce Knapp on UFO News Radio CFRB 1010.
Program 195, about UFOs, unidentified flying objects. In studio with me tonight is Dave Furlott. This hour, our first guest is Dr. Joe Nickel, PhD, which he got from the University of Kentucky back in 1987. Dr. Nickel is a senior research fellow of the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, PSYCOP, an international scientific organization, and he serves on the committee's executive council and on the editorial board of its magazine, The Skeptical Inquirer. He also writes a column for the magazine, Investigative Files. Dr. Joe Nickel is a former professional stage magician. He was a resident magician at the Houdini Magical Hall of Fame for 3 years and private investigator for a world-famous detective agency. Dr. Nickel taught technical writing for several years at the University of Kentucky before taking a full-time position with PSYCOP at its offices in the Center for Inquiry in Amherst, outside of Buffalo, New York. And now, utilizing his varied background, Dr. Nickel has become widely known as an investigator of myths and mysteries, frauds, forgeries, and hoaxes. He's been called the modern Sherlock Holmes, the original Ghostbuster, and the real-life Scully from The X-Files. He has investigated a number of haunted house cases, including the Amityville Horror and the McKenzie House here in Toronto. Dr. Nickel is the author, co-author, or editor of 16 books, including Inquest on the Shroud of Turin, Secrets of the Supernatural with John Fisher, The Magic Detectives, Pen, Ink, and Evidence, Ambrose Bierce's Missing, Missing Pieces, which he co-authored with Robert A. Baker, Mysterious Realms, Looking for a Miracle, Psychic Sleuths, Camera Clues, Entities, Detecting Forgery, The Outer Edge, The UFO Invasion, and Crime Science. His latest book is Real Life X-Files, Investigating the Paranormal. Joining us from his home in upstate New York is Dr. Joe Nickel. Good evening, Dr. Nickel. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. I'm tired just listening to this long list of books. I vaguely remember writing all those.
Well, you haven't had much time to do much else,
That's
have you?
That's it.
Some basics, if you please, for the sake of listeners who aren't familiar with the organization that you work with. Can you give us a bit of a backgrounder on the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal?
I like to point out that investigation is our middle name. We were founded about 26 years ago by such luminaries as Carl Sagan and Dr. Paul Kurtz, the philosopher. Our supporters have included people like the entertainer Steve Allen, who I was proud to have as a good friend until his recent and untimely death. We look into paranormal claims and fringe science claims. By paranormal, we mean those things that are beyond the normal range of science and human experience. It's a broad umbrella that would include all of the supernatural, but also include such things as UFOs or the Loch Ness Monster, which, if they existed, might be perfectly natural. My own personal philosophy is that we should neither be close-minded debunkers, nor credulous mystery mongers, that what we should do, and this reflects my own background as a detective, we should carefully investigate paranormal claims with a view toward solving them.
I find it interesting that the organization lumps a whole variety of subjects all together as paranormal.
Not just that we do. I think that's, you know, it's very widely done on both sides of the issue. It's a very modern and common term now, paranormal. It's pretty much the standard definition on both sides, not just from a skeptical side. There needed to be a term for something that was not entirely judgmental and that didn't rule in or out a wide variety of mysteries that are of interest to people. And I think it does include supernatural, but, you know, one man's supernatural claim may be another man's natural claim. Ghosts, for example, are they evidence of the supernatural or a purely natural phenomenon, or do they exist at all? And paranormal is a term that sort of, I think, embraces all those possibilities.
What sort of funding do you get?
Well, back to
is it government funding?
We don't rob banks.
Uh-huh.
We're not paid off by the CIA. We're a respectable think tank that is a non-profit organization, and we get revenues from the sale of our magazine, Skeptical Inquirer, and from benefactors who graciously write us checks.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Allen, I mentioned earlier, the great entertainer, frequently had benefits for us and raised funds and lent his good name, so did Carl Sagan and others, to fundraising.
Yeah.
And if you've ever had to do that, it's
once or twice,
endlessly
yes.
troublesome, and you're constantly worrying about the next funding.
Do you receive sufficient funds to be able to investigate things pretty thoroughly?
Well, I think we do, but of course, we're tasked with investigating all the paranormal claims, not just one little niche like UFOs or mm-hmm. ghosts or crop circles in England. They're almost complete institutions of promotion of these things, spiritualism, miracle claims. One could spend, of course, an entire organization's lifetime investigating miracle claims. So we're really able only to look at the major cases and not every case. We do recognize that it's not our burden to disprove anything. Anyone who understands law or scholarship or science knows that it's not the burden of skeptics, and we are skeptics, to disprove, but rather it's the burden of those who make claims to support their claims. For example, just to take a sort of a silly, maybe a silly example to illustrate the point, assuming most of our listeners don't believe in fairies or leprechauns, you cannot prove there are no leprechauns. You could raise funds and have expeditions to investigate leprechauns. Perhaps you could justify it to some people that there was this great need to investigate leprechauns, that we have these nasty debunkers who claim that leprechauns don't exist. And so let's say we went to Ireland and we searched for a couple of 3 years and found no leprechauns. The believers might say, well, don't you know the wee creatures have are mostly located at Blarney Castle? They hide in the bushes there. And then we would go back and launch another expedition and search Blarney Castle, and then maybe we'd be told, but don't you know the wee creatures have the power of invisibility? And so we would never succeed, while, of course, the pro-leprechaun faction would continue to mystery monger, publish pseudoscientific treatises and mystery mongering magazines, and might convince the public that somehow we weren't investigating enough and we were failures because we hadn't disproved them. But as I say, anyone who really knows how matters are adjudicated knows that it's the burden of proof on the plaintiff in a court of law or on the person who makes some assertion.
Back to UFOs here. What type of investigation have you gotten involved in on that? That's Dave Furlott, who's sitting in the bucket seat here tonight.
Yes. Probably most of PSYCOP's UFO investigations in the sense of, you know, flying saucers or reported lights in the sky, extraterrestrial craft, that sort of thing, probably done more by our experts like Philip Klass and retired Air Force Major James McGahey. My own research has been focused more on the alien mythology and the claims of certain people that they've been abducted by aliens, not so much on the UFO sightings, which I think are relatively uninteresting today. They got a lot of attention in the past, but the The evidence is very dubious when we look at the UFO sightings. What we have largely is a extended logical fallacy called arguing from ignorance. And this is true of much of the paranormal, maybe I should say most of the paranormal, or nearly all of the paranormal. People don't really offer positive evidence of ghosts or Bigfoot. They've not caught one. They have no hard evidence. But what they have is a sort of a taunt. You can't explain this. What is the cause of this, they ask. They use the term unexplained a lot. The problem is that you cannot extrapolate from I don't know to some sort of assertion. That's called an argument from ignorance. In other words, you can't say, I don't know what the noise in the old house was, therefore it's a ghost, or probably a ghost, or any such thing. Or, I don't know what the bright light in the sky was, therefore it may be an extraterrestrial craft. That's a logical fallacy, and yet it's really the basis for most of the, what we might think of as the pro-UFO institution.
There are a lot of things about UFOs that I read and hear. Unfortunately, I'm not historically well-versed in a lot of the field. So what I've done is I've invited Stanton Friedman to join us here on the program tonight. I don't know if you two gentlemen have come across one another in the past. I don't know that you're even aware of each other. Stanton Friedman, are you there?
I'm here in beautiful downtown Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Well, Dr. Joe Nickel is with us, and he's in beautiful downtown, I guess it's Amherst, Dr. Nickel?
Yeah, near Buffalo.
Near Buffalo. It seems to me that there's been a degree of antipathy between the skeptics and the ufologists in the past, with skeptics saying that there ain't no such thing.
I believe that's, in all fairness, not what I've said.
No, I'm not saying you specifically, but it seems to
be the general
impression that's left with the public and people like me.
Well, maybe I can correct that.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, the recognition that the burden of proof is on the claimant does not assert that something does not exist. If you say, prove it to me, I'm interested in your claim of leprechauns, prove it to me. I've not asserted that leprechauns do not exist, because to assert that, I then accept the burden to prove something that can't be proved. So one would not be very bright to assert that there are no leprechauns, and I would say the same thing from the perspective of flying saucers or UFOs. Certainly, there are lots of UFOs by definition. Many people have seen them. I've seen several. The difference is that I have been either fortunate or whatever in the ones I've seen to puzzle out generally what they were, and to transport them or transfer them from, transform them, I guess is the right word, from UFOs to IFOs. For example, I once, many years ago, saw a white disk of light flit across the sky, and I had never seen anything like it. And I stopped my car and got out of the car and looked at the sky, and in a bit, here was another white disk of light zipping by. And as I watch the sky, and I don't know whether maybe Stanton Friedman has an explanation for this. If he doesn't, then it's a UFO, isn't it? But eventually I did explain it, and then it became an IFO.
Well, sure, most UFO sightings become IFOs.
But suppose I hadn't figured out what it was.
Well, be in my gray basket as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
The kicker,
and that's all it would be, and that's all basically.
Yeah, I don't know what you saw, and you haven't related all the details, obviously. And my first thought was, gee, sounds like a searchlight on a cloud moving by and then going back around again. But it's the wrong question. Can most sightings be explained? Can most drugs be shown not to cure diseases? That's certainly true, but it's irrelevant. The question is, can any drugs treat any diseases. If you've got cancer, you'd like one that does. The fact that 99.99% don't is irrelevant to you.
I'm not sure that's a very good analogy, but...
Well, a gold miner is like to mine gold if there's a half ounce of gold per ton of ore. We got a lot more than a half ounce per ton when it comes to UFO sightings.
Yes, but we know for a fact that there are gold nuggets. In fact, I picked them up when I worked in the Yukon Territory and had a gold claim. So there's absolutely no question that gold nuggets exist, and not a single flying saucer has
no
ever been proven. Not one flying saucer has ever been proven. So they're all questioned.
No.
If we were searching for another substance, let's make up a new name instead of gold. Let's call it mineral
Unobtainium.
X.
Why not?
We had searched for forever and never found one specimen of mineral X. That would be a more comparable.
No, the problem is this argument from ignorance. It seems to me that the skeptics typically are ignorant of the data. Over and over again, I find they don't deal with the evidence.
In studio tonight with me is Dave Furlot, and out there on the phone lines from PSYCOP, the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, is Dr. Joe Nickel. Also on the line with us from his home in...
Fredericton.
Thanks, Stan. I keep saying St. John.
Joe Nickel helping Stan out there. I've been to Fredericton. It's a great place.
In Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Home of the giant Coleman frog.
Yeah, there were people here who were very unhappy about your analysis about that. But that's a separate discussion.
I had great fun, these mock debates, and they were pretending to be outraged. It was great fun.
Stanton T. Friedman, now the grandfather of Roswell.
I just aged quickly. I was the father.
Blame Stanton T. Friedman is Real, the documentary, for that one, Stan. We were discussing poor analogies.
I think that when we start looking at UFOs, neither I nor any of the other scientists I know who are serious about flying saucers reason from the notion that, well, what else can it be? It must be a spaceship. Quite the opposite. It's the psychopians, well, I don't know what the right word is there, psychoppers, whatever, who reason from ignorance. We know there aren't any flying saucers, so what people have seen obviously can't be one. I was glad to hear Joe admit that most of the investigation is done by people like Phil Klass. Phil's the one who I think took an idea from Joe. For example, in the MJ-12 documents, there's some clear-cut falsities that have been proclaimed by PSYCOP. Phil, for example, challenged me on the typeface on the Cutler Twining memo. Perhaps I hadn't noticed it was done in the large Pica type, and that was wrong because it should have been the small Elite type. He had 9 samples to prove it. Challenged me to provide any genuine letters, memos, etc. from the National Security Council, right time frame and some other restrictions. Done in the same size and style type.
You and Phil have warred back and forth and each wagered and lost.
No, I didn't lose. Wait, let's get this straight. He challenged me on the Pica type, offered me
$100. You've never lost a bet to Phil Klass?
What?
You've never lost a bet to Phil Klass?
No, I have
not. You've never paid him money?
Have I paid him money? No.
Yeah.
He paid me money. Let's get it straight. He challenged me on the Pica type. He offered to pay me $100
each. So if I show you where you paid Phil Klass money, what would you say to that? Would you say Phil's lying, or?
I would certainly be dumbfounded, yes. Let me tell what he paid me, and then you can tell what I supposedly
did. I don't have his material in front of me, but I didn't know we were going to get into a ad hominem attack on Phil Klass.
It's not an ad hominem attack.
This is really
it's
a waste,
fact.
It's a waste of my time.
Joe, let's listen.
I thought I was coming on the program to talk about UFOs, and instead I've got UFO people attacking PSYCOP and engaging in an ad hominem attack.
No,
what ad hominem attack?
Gentlemen, the idea...
We have some evidence. Let's talk about the evidence.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, let me tell you that I have a background in forensic documents. I wrote the book Pen, Ink, and Evidence. I wrote the book Detecting Forgery, both peer-reviewed. As a consequence, I was invited as a VIP for a tour of the U.S. Secret Service Document Laboratory.
What has that got to do with Phil Klass paying me $1,000
I'm going to tell you that the MJ-12 documents are forgeries. and that you've been fooled by them, and that you're not an expert in the field and have no business whatsoever talking about the question of forgery. You have absolutely no training.
Who's talking
you might as well do brain
surgery. Now? I'm talking facts, Joe.
No,
Bill
but
challenged
you're not,
me.
You're not competent to talk the facts. You're not an
Why
expert
Why did Bill
in the field.
Pay me $1,000 for providing more than 10 documents done in the same size and style type as the Cutler Twining memo?
It's a red herring because Phil
it's
used
not
that.
A red herring.
In an early stage of the research, Phil used that as a means to find out whether there were such typefaces. But it's all irrelevant now because we know that the MJ-12 documents are amateurish forgeries done by paste-up, re-photographed. The originals are not available. And no document expert that I know does anything other than snicker over them.
You haven't looked at the work from Bob Wood's document expert, I suppose. Let's look at another example. You don't like to talk about Phil paying me $1,000 for proving him wrong about the typeface? A copy of his check is in my final report on Operation Majestic 12. It's listed on my website, www.b-j-enterprises.com.
Well, you're just misleading other people with your lack of knowledge of documents.
Let's talk specifics, Joe.
Well,
let's talk specifics. Phil made other claims. Other people have made claims on the Cutler Twining memo again. The document classification of top secret
restricted. Well, people can read my analysis of the MJ-12 documents, and then they can look at my credentials, and they can
and they can look at my
yours
book,
and look at your credentials
magic.
Or the absence thereof, and you know I think you're just wasting your life hawking these obvious amateurish forgeries that shouldn't fool anyone for 5 minutes. A lot of UFO people. Thoroughly side with me on this issue.
I didn't say they didn't. I'm talking specifics, Joe. It was claimed that the security marking was inappropriate, top secret restricted. Wasn't used until the Nixon days. This is a 1954 document.
I don't care who claimed what. I'm telling you that the preponderance of the evidence clearly shows that the MJ-12 documents are amateurish paste-up forgeries and that there is just no debate of it.
Of course there's a debate.
You're outside your element.
Joe,
you need
to
get
my
you need to get a certified question document examiner, and they'll tell you, first of all, that you cannot authenticate anything from copies, or else they're disreputable.
You can certainly determine whether the information content is correct or not, Joe.
Disauthenticate. And these documents don't get to first base. I've authenticated and debunked various Abraham Lincoln and George Washington letters. I
What's
just
that got to do with
MJ-12?
Gentlemen, let's agree to disagree on the MJ-12 documents, okay? Now, let's set that aside. I don't think that the next 10 hours would resolve this.
It's already resolved.
Could read my book and my report.
The document examiners have...
Well, in both your minds, it's resolved. So let's, as I said, agree to disagree. I want to suggest something to you both. Over the years, there's been this antipathy between the skeptics and the UFO researchers. The UFO researchers claim that they have a lot of evidence that really needs to be looked at, by scientists. Now,
I'm a scientist. I agree with you. We do claim that there's a lot of evidence that isn't being looked at by the skeptics.
Okay. Now, when I called PSYCOP headquarters in Amherst, I asked for someone who could come on this program and talk UFOs. And presumably, the gentleman that suggested Dr. Joe Nickel felt
I'm happy
that,
to talk about you.
Okay. Because of your position with PSYCOP as a senior research fellow, do you think, Dr. Nickel, Stanton Friedman, do you think that it's possible that UFO researchers could come to PSYCOP with, let's say, a dozen modern cases that PSYCOP could scientifically look at these cases, and perhaps as a result of that, one way or the other, perhaps put the UFO mystery to rest, either one way or the other, so that, as you said, Dr. Nickel, people can stop wasting their lives.
Well, stop. That's right. Stop wasting their lives on the MJ-12 documents. Might as well claim the Shroud of Turin was authentic, and these things have been...
I would beg to differ, because I've been reading recently that the Shroud of Turin is not a fake.
Carbon dated, it's to the time of the forger's confession, and it's covered with tempera paint found by the best laboratory to do that sort of analysis in the world.
But that's...
I wrote a book on
Dr. Nickel.
We're
getting off the subject here, and I want to come back to the question again. Do you think, Dr. Nickel, that it is possible to take, let's say, a dozen modern cases for PSYCOP to look into them in tandem with two or three or four UFO researchers, senior UFO researchers, people who know what they're talking about, who are scientifically trained? Do you think it's possible for the two fields to get together and come to some sort of conclusion, one way or the other, about UFOs?
Well, the positions are very entrenched, but...
Yes, they are.
I would say that it's not the burden of PSYCOP to take claims made by so-called self-styled UFO researchers.
But it's not, you see, it's not, it's this massive amount of evidence.
Sure, and they've done this.
Circumstantial evidence, yes.
They have done this since 1947.
Yes.
They have, as soon as PSYCOP has said, or other skeptics before them have said, this is not a credible claim, this is a forged document, this is a fake UFO photograph, and so on.
Yeah. Okay.
Then what we've been told was, nasty debunkers have not given us a fair hearing. We've got these 20 other cases that we want to now inflict on you, and it's been endless.
Dr. Nickel,
Stan Friedman would list five cases that he thinks UFOs rest on, then maybe some people would be prepared to more specifically address those with some sense that if they were thoroughly discredited, Stanton Friedman would stop, you know, sort of tossing these out.
Well, you know,
keep in mind that, look, it only takes 2 minutes to make a UFO claim. It could take 2 years to run down any one of those. And so...
But that's what UFO researchers are doing.
That's what they ought to do.
That's what they are doing.
If they believe that this is apt to pan gold nuggets, they ought to do that.
Blanket dismissal.
You've not heard that from me.
No, but blanket dismissal seems to come from a lot of skeptics. Some of those skeptics are related to PSYCOP. Gentlemen, I pose the question, and I want to pose it again. Is it possible for the two sides to get together on a dozen modern cases and scientifically, without any preconceived notions, is it possible for the two sides to get together and work together and examine what are considered to be 12 good modern UFO reports?
Well, Jim McDonald put 41 in his congressional testimony. Jim interviewed over 500 witnesses for those 41 plus other cases, of course. And those still stand up, so of course I have found that the skeptics don't deal with. I start with five large-scale scientific studies, not with five cases. Look at Blue Book Special Report 14. Class has written many books. He doesn't even mention it.
What do you think, Stan, is the single best case that makes the case for extraterrestrial craft?
It's hard to put,
Well, what would be, you know, we've neglected all these, we've 40 or 5 or 10 or 200, but surely, after all these years of you, you know, making
well, you
a career
to,
of this,
you haven't
surely
defined,
you can name one.
How do you define what is best? I like Roswell, you don't like Roswell.
Yeah, Roswell's a joke.
Well, to you it is, but Joe, it was a joke when you claimed that the origin of the case was a public information officer whose name you didn't know who put out that press release on his own. Now that is a joke, a total joke.
Well, this is typical of the kind of Let's come back to twisting of facts that Stanton Friedman does, and that's why nobody wants to work with.
Let's come back.
You don't want to debate me, that's for sure.
I don't mind debating you. You're not an honest debater. As everybody knows, I can get you a petition to that effect.
Oh, boy. Gentlemen, I need to ask the question again. Is it possible for PSYCOP and half a dozen established UFO researchers to get together and work on a dozen modern UFO cases, cases that UFO researchers consider to be worthwhile looking into because they're totally puzzled by them? And let's decide, first of all, is it possible for both sides to work together?
Dubious, but it's possibly possible. Phil Glass and I have even had nice meals together when we didn't talk about UFOs.
I certainly have friends across the spectrum. But again, I would say that, you know, what we need to have are the people who are proponents to bring forth the evidence that they think makes the case, the one most neglected case or the five most neglected case. See if they will agree on it, and then turn over their evidence for review, and I think PSYCOP would be receptive to that. But so far, it's been a matter of people like Stanton Friedman making a career of Roswell, when in fact,
the Roswell
Daily Record had Mac Brazel describing foiled paper, sticks, string, tape, and rubber, and never ever mentioning alien bodies.
We've had
hoax after hoax, alien autopsy hoaxes, and diary hoaxes.
Did I say that wasn't a hoax?
Hold on. Dr. Nickel, Dave Verlot here. Again, let's try and stay away from stuff like Roswell, which goes back to 1947. We'll be debating it endlessly. What we're talking about here is modern reports of
UFOs.
That's a very good point. That haven't yet been debunked.
Well, please make me a portfolio of those cases and send them to me, and I'd be glad to look at them. Pick what did the host suggest? Five cases.
You suggested five. I suggested a dozen.
Pardon?
I said Dr. Nickel suggested five. I'd suggested a dozen.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, let's start with a few. Start with one. Start with five. Okay.
Well, the RB-47
because,
case
as I say,
would be a good
you
one.
Could give me, surely you understand, you could give me, I could give you one, I can give you now one case, and you might spend the next 2 or 3 years full time before you then find out that it goes nowhere or is simply another photo hoax.
Understood. I mean, we've had cases within ufology where people have turned around, such as Royce
problem.
J. Myers, and looked at things like the Jonathan Reed hoax. Okay, and I stress that hoax. That has been investigated. What we're talking about here is something that we can turn around and get both sides working together on and be able to say one way or the other, this is either a hoax, it's misleading, or whatever, or it is something that
we can't explain.
You've really hit the nail on the head there. With the big conclusion here is supposed to be we can't explain it. And again,
no, it isn't.
It isn't.
No, that's a preconception on your part, Dr. Nickel. What I'm saying is...
Okay, tell me what kind of evidence you think would resolve the UFO enigma.
Testimony from competent witnesses are used in court. You were a detective, Joe. What was your PhD in, incidentally?
English literature and folklore.
I did
some of my work on the Hangar 18 UFO tales.
How long did you spend working under national security requirements?
None. I'm free of taint there.
Free of knowledge of how security works, I would say.
Free of taint.
Oh, ignorance is bliss, I guess.
Well, if I had said I had, you know, military background, then I'd be accused of being a CIA flunky, so I can't win.
No, I said worked under security. I didn't say military. I worked under security for 14 years. I think I worked as a scientist. Your degree is in English.
When did you last work as a scientist?
Oh, all through the 80s and the early 90s. Phil Klass once claimed that for a particular year, he claimed it in the Skeptical Inquirer, that I earned all my earnings from lecturing about flying saucers. I was able to prove to him with my tax returns that I earned a great deal of almost all my money that year.
Wonderful.
For scientific work on the commissioning of Point Lepreau nuclear generating station. I've also published papers on the radon problem.
I'm thrilled by your self-promotion, but nevertheless...
Joe, can you be civil, for goodness sakes? You know, it's really strange here. You want to hog the spotlight so nobody can get a word in edgewise, so you can take potshots at me without dealing with the matters at hand. You should know better than that as a representative of
the state. Not at all. Bring them on. Bring your cases on. We've just had MJ-12 and Roswell, which have, you know, perished in the dust.
And your dust.
Nobody on either side now.
I mean, Dr. Nickel, it seems to me, and probably a lot of the audience, that you really are dwelling in the past. It's old thinking.
Well, but again, the problem is every time we spend 2, 3, 4 years on a project, and I've spent many on these matters, we're told, oh, well, maybe so, but here's the new case.
Ufology polices itself because there are no degrees in this field. There's no peer review, recognized peer
review.
I look forward
to the learned gentleman sending me their 5 best cases.
We'll talk about it on the radio again in the future. Dr. Nickel, thank you very much indeed for your time. Stanton T. Friedman, thank you for yours. We will put 5 cases together and we will put this to the test. We will be back.
You're listening to Strange Days Indeed. We will continue with Errol Bruce Knapp on UFO News Radio, CFRB 1010.